Welcome to Front Page Jerusalem, a weekly news digest covering events in Israel. It's relevant and accurate information you need to know, direct from the Holy Land. You're listening to Front Page Jerusalem.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Front Page Jerusalem, the voice of Israel to the world, brought to you by Christian Friends of Israel in the city of the great king, Jerusalem. I'm Earl Cox.
And I'm Kevin Howard in Jerusalem.
Year after year, the nation of Israel has been setting new records for tourism in the country as people are coming to see for themselves what this tiny nation is all about. A mix of modern technology and innovation with a preserved ancient history that abounds, Israel has become an amazing destination for a multitude of reasons. Whether visiting for the incredible lay of the land or the amazing beaches of the Mediterranean Sea, those arriving are usually most surprised at the beauty and calm that is present throughout much of the land of Israel. A sense of safety and security that is quite contrary to the secular media narrative, often depicting a war-torn country of tension and strife. Each year, the city of Jerusalem offers the unique experience of the Jerusalem Marathon that literally closes streets for the day. The event gathers runners, young and old, from nations around the world. And Kevin Howard recently spoke with Jonathan Feldstein, the founder of Run for Zion, a brave new initiative designed to help build Jewish-Christian relations and so much more. We'll bring you that close-up interview in just a moment. But first, let's hear from the CFI Jerusalem News Desk with David Milburn as the recent headlines from Israel. David?
Thanks, Errol. In an attempt to determine how much microplastic particles are in commercial table salt, Israeli scientists have analyzed three of the most widely used salts in Israel. Their results not only show an abundant presence of microplastics in all three types of salt, but reveal that the average Israeli consumes about 2,000 microplastic particles per year, along with their food, on account of seasoning with regional table salt. In recent years, significant research efforts were made to find out more about the severity and root causes of the microplastic pollution among Israeli coastlines. While most of these studies focused on the larger Mediterranean coastline, a recent study conducted by the Tel Aviv University has shown substantial amounts of microplastics in maritime organisms off the coast of Eilat at the Red Sea. Now, before we return to Earl, here's today's This Page in History.
On July 24, 1862, Martin Van Buren, the 8th President of the United States, passed away. He was the first president to order an American consul to intervene on behalf of Jews abroad. In 1840, he instructed the United States Consul in Egypt to protect the Jews of Damascus, who were under attack because of a false blood ritual accusation. Van Buren ordered his diplomats to extend the active sympathy and generous interposition of the government of the United States on behalf of an oppressed and persecuted race, among whose kindred are found some of the worthiest and patriotic of our citizens. Prior to the unprecedented coziness President Trump enjoys with Israel, Truman and Nixon are other notable chief executives that have contributed to the existence of the Jewish nation, both intimating that there may have been some divine inspiration involved.
Welcome back, everybody. Marathon events around the world are nothing new, but a special program attached to the annual Jerusalem Marathon is providing an opportunity for some lasting new relationships with the nation of Israel. Our Kevin Howard recently spoke with Jonathan Feldstein of Run for Zion to find out more about this interesting new program.
Thanks, Earl. I'm very honored to be in the studio today with Mr. Jonathan Feldstein. He's the president of Run for Zion. Jonathan, thanks for being our guest today.
Thank you, Kevin. It's great to be here with you.
Jonathan, tell us a little bit about your journey to Israel and what God has done to bring you to where you are today.
God has a funny sense of humor with me. I was born and grew up in New Jersey. I studied at Emory in Atlanta and lived there for several years, and then went back up north in 1990 so I could meet my wife and begin the next chapter, which is what I always aspired to, husband, father, and now grandfather. But both my wife and I, from around the same age, even before we had met each other, had always wanted to live in Israel. For me, it came from my father having been born here. I call him, he was a true Palestinian. He was born in the 1930s when the British referred to the Jews as the Palestinians. And in the most mundane ways, I had a very strong Israeli orientation because he gave me a name that he couldn't even pronounce. He never could say TH, so he would always call me Jonathan. So even when he was asking me, did I do my homework, could I go rake the leaves, take out the garbage, it was always with an Israeli inflection. And I had wanted to be here since I was a kid, understanding that this is a better place to raise children. And actually, it was interesting. Through his death, which is almost 23 years ago now, I took it off the table. I said, no way, we're not moving, we're not leaving. At the time, we had the only children on both sides of the family. And that's where God has his sense of humor. And ultimately, several years after that, we ended up making Aliyah 15 years ago. Despite the fact that I thought maybe that was never going to happen, he understood what was really what I needed to be doing. And so this summer will be 15 years, and it's been incredible. I've realized the vision that God gave me as a teenager myself, that this is a better place to raise children. And my kids are grateful for that. We watch American TV. They have friends and family that come and visit, and they are grateful that we live here, that we're part of writing the history and not living of our future, and not living on the sidelines watching from the bleachers. And that's really wonderful. It's exciting and scary to have our oldest son go to the Army to be a paratrooper this summer. And the only thing I say sometimes about living in Israel, that it's a shame that we didn't come here earlier, but that was all part of God's timing and plan for us. It's a blessing. Sometimes you have to remember that it's a blessing, but it is a blessing. It's incredible to be here.
Do you think that there is a disconnect then for much of American Jewry in regards to Israel? And if so, why does that exist?
So I would say that there are probably two sources of disconnection. I think it's a great word that you used for American Jews or Jews in the diaspora in general. First being the further you go from the source of traditional Judaism. And I'm talking about both time and the substance of living a Jewish life. Most Jews in the diaspora are not observant, are not Orthodox. There may be elements of tradition. As one of my college professors used to call it, he would refer to it as delicatessen Judaism, cultural Judaism, which, by the way, is how I grew up. And actually, come to think of it, going to your original question, I understood as a kid that if I didn't give my kids more than I got, then they would ultimately move in that direction of being disconnected from Israel and the Jewish people. And I feel that sometimes, and this is not a disparaging look at American Jews, I think it's just the distance. You're further away and you feel connected, but the substance of that, the flavor of the juice, isn't as strong. And I think that that's a big part of it. And then of course, there's the actual religious observance. Certainly American Jews, and I would think probably Jews in the rest of the world, and actually even here in Israel, are not religiously observant. So we disconnect. But for me, peoplehood was and remains always so important. I'm connected to a place where we are here in Jerusalem. I'm connected to history of 4,000 years. When I held my grandson during his circumcision when he was 8 days old, it was one of the most emotional experiences in my life. Not because there's a new baby, but he's entering the covenant that God established with Abraham thousands of years ago. And here we are doing that in Israel. So I think that there are a lot of ways that Jews can and should reconnect. The other piece of it, by the way, and specifically with America, although that's been changing recently, it's a very easy and welcoming place for Jews. It's very comfortable. And people live good lives, and those who want to connect in a Jewish way do so without a whole lot of threats. I mean, there's more security needed there now, but they're affluent, comfortable, Torah-centric lives, even in Orthodox communities. But for lots of reasons, they don't choose to make Israel as the center of their lives as we chose.
So around the world globally, Israel has seen an increase in Aliyah, immigration to Israel. All the while anti-Semitism also seems to be increasing. How do you see it?
It's definitely increasing. in a lovely ecumenical way, it's increasing both from the right and from the left, but that's terribly dangerous. I have no reason to believe that minus a wake-up that requires God's direct intervention, I don't see that changing any time so quickly. Anti-Semitism has been so long, in recent years, tied to anti-Israel, and people don't draw a distinction. And sometimes people use an anti-Israel cover for their anti-Semitism. I can't tell you why, except maybe this is God's plan to try and give more Jews the kick in the butt that they need to come home. That yesterday, there was a post on my Facebook. Someone showed a picture of a anti-Israel demonstration in my old neighborhood in New Jersey, the center of a very thriving modern Orthodox Jewish community. And my response on Facebook was to post a link to Nefesh B'Nefesh, which is one of the organizations that actively is promoting Aliyah, bringing Jews home. Maybe we need that. Unfortunately, Jewish immigration to Israel has either been a push factor, fleeing something bad, or a pull. The more distant Jews get with the draw to want to come to Israel, like I did since I was an adolescent, so there's less of a pull factor. And maybe this is God's plan to bring us home, and by giving us a bigger push factor.
Jonathan, what do you find are the biggest misconceptions when you're talking to people about Israel who have never been here before?
So a lot of it is the political situation, the belief that we're somehow, the word that has trickled in, or the thought is the apartheid nature, that somehow Arabs are discriminated against here as blacks were in apartheid South Africa. And it couldn't be further from the truth. There's tons of interaction on a daily basis, and there may not be love, and there certainly isn't peace, but there also isn't discrimination. You can't have that. When you drive around Israel and just see road signs in English, Arabic, and Hebrew, you know, I don't think there's any other country in the world that has a minority of 20% and actually has the respect for that minority of putting their culture first and foremost. I don't think there's a non-Muslim country in the world where during the month of Ramadan, you have national radio explaining what Ramadan is and interviewing Muslim leaders. So I think there's a tremendous amount of respect. I think there are a lot of problems that need to be fixed. And the outgrowth of that, the other misconception, is that it's unsafe to be here. And certainly, I mean, it'd be a lie to sit here and say that there aren't things that there are things that are not safe. I feel safer here in Israel than I do in many, many places when I'm traveling. I don't want to say what city. I don't want to disparage this particular city. But I ended up being in a place on Shabbat, and I had to walk 3 miles, and was told after the fact that I shouldn't have walked where I walked in this city. And another place I arrived, and the hotel that I was in the middle of also an urban area, was gated, and signs all over the place, don't leave things in your car because people will steal them. Then that doesn't mean that it's unsafe physically. People will steal your things. It doesn't mean they're going to bodily harm you. But I feel safer here. I let my kids go out Friday night when I go to sleep, and they'll walk around our town of 10,000, 11,000 people and visit their friends and come home at 1, 2, or 3 in the morning. And I don't do what my parents used to do, which is wait up for me. I go to sleep. But the paradox is where we live over the Green Line. We live in, quote unquote, a settlement. Our immediate next door neighbors are two Arab villages. One would think we should be terrified to let our children go out by themselves at night. And that's the last thing on our minds. The safety, the physical sense of security is much greater here than I think in most places, certainly in America, that I'm familiar with.
As Christians continue to pray for the nation of Israel and her people, let's also remember to be thankful that God is continuing to grow and repair the relationships between Christians and Jews around the world. Well, right now we need to take a short break so that you can hear about a special outreach project of Christian Friends of Israel that's making a real difference in the lives of some exceptional people in Israel today.
The nature of the wars does not change, but the nature of the enemy does. These are the words of Yossi Baidatz, Major General, Israel's Defense Forces, regarding the nature of Israel's enemies who are bent on terror. Groups like Hamas and Hezbollah know that the defenders of Israel value life, and the terrorists look for ways to exploit this for their own gain. Due to the reckless behavior of terror organizations, the IDF exercises great caution in the use of deadly force to avoid harming civilians, even while increasing the danger to themselves. But this is the price you pay when you value human life. And this is the battle the IDF faces every day. Hi, I'm Jim McKenzie, Project Coordinator for CFI's Project David's Shield. I have witnessed firsthand how these selfless warriors commit to training and learning the skills required to protect their homeland, defending those who cannot defend themselves, while at the same time protecting innocent civilian lives. By choosing life, these soldiers win a victory on their own personal battlefield within. They choose light over darkness and life over death, blessings instead of curses. When we do this, we align ourselves with the God who created light and all that he says is good.
Christian Friends of Israel's project, David's Shield. Just one more way we're making a difference in Israel, one life at a time. For more information, go to frontpagejerusalem.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to our continuing discussion between Front Page Jerusalem's Kevin Howard and Jonathan Felstein as they talk about the Run for Zion initiative that brings runners from around the world to the Jerusalem Marathon in Israel.
Jonathan, last year you started a brand new project called Run for Zion. Tell me the heart of this and what's its purpose?
Well, it was more than a heart. God called me decades ago to be a bridge between Jews and Christians, and it's something that I've tried to weave into everything that I do in my personal life as well as my professional life. And I had worked for a number of different organizations where over the years I became disenchanted, where they were only looking at really how much money one could raise among Christians to support projects in Israel. And that's disheartening because that's not a reciprocal relationship. It's not really fellowship or building bridges. It's a monetary transaction. And what I had termed, I shared with you earlier, Jews and Israelis looking at Christians as a faith-based ATM. It's not good enough for me. So I left my job a year ago. I established a new nonprofit. The nonprofit is called the Genesis 123 Foundation, built on the foundation of everything in Genesis 12:3. Our goal is very simple, to be a bridge between Jews and Christians with Israel, and provide meaningful, unique ways to engage that relationship or those relationships. How we're doing it, I want to emphasize, is unique because I don't want to just come in and try and take a piece of an existing pie that others are ardently existing within. I'm creating new projects that haven't been done as new ways to engage these relationships. And Run for Zion was the first. A year ago, I had a meeting with the mayor of Jerusalem near Barakat. We affirmed that as mayor and as an entrepreneur and as a runner, nobody had ever promoted the Jerusalem Marathon as a Christian experience. And he was blown away by the idea. He was shocked that nobody on his team ever thought of it. He understood that we need to, marketing is a business word, but that's the word that comes to mind. We need to market Israel in ways that are not Jewish if we want Christians or other non-Jews to be able to embrace Israel more wholly, more holistically. At its simplest, Run for Zion is promoting the Jerusalem Marathon. Eventually, we will promote other running experiences here in Israel. There's one marathon in Tel Aviv, in the Galilee, one through the hills of Samaria, even one at the lowest point on the face of the earth at the Dead Sea. And that will all be under the banner of Run for Zion. And that gives Christians the opportunity, who are runners, to come and have a meaningful, different experience in Israel. And we're building a touring package that has a service component to it, so people are interacting and not just seeing Israel from the windows of a tour bus, But because a lot of my background is in fundraising, and I know people genuinely want to bless Israel financially, so we've added a crowdfunding component, which serves two purposes. One is that it's very normal. You do a 10K walk or a race, and you ask people to sponsor you for some cause. So we have that. We have a crowdfunding, and we're encouraging every participant to invite their friends and family to sponsor them. And that money is being divided among several organizations here in Israel that do meaningful, good work with fiscal and programmatic integrity. That's important because a lot of organizations want the money but don't really deliver on what they say they're delivering, and I don't want to be involved with people like that. So we're trying to keep it at the highest level.
So what do the runners get out of this?
So the purpose is to engage people to come and have a meaningful experience. We, in our inaugural year this year, we had a mix of people, about 50-50, who had been to Israel before and those who hadn't. For those who had been to Israel before, this is a new, incredible way of looking at Israel. They weren't, by the way, I want to point out, they weren't all runners. What we realized this year is that marathon is a dangerous word because it implies a very long race. And for someone like myself, who's not even a runner, I wouldn't think of it. So we're promoting the opportunities to run or walk, 5K, 10K, full and half marathon, or even just be part of a cheering section, which is so important in these races, to have people in the same shirts looking for people in the same shirts or their own friends and relatives who will be there, or classmates who will be there on the sidelines watching people run or walk through Jerusalem. But, you know, Neil Armstrong had a beautiful story. He apparently came here, I don't remember what year it was, but the first time he came to Israel, I didn't know that he was a Christian. When he came to Israel, he asked his host to bring him to a place where Jesus actually walked. And when he was taken there on the southern steps of the Temple Mount, which that's intuitive, right? Any Jew in that era would have walked there if they were coming to the pilgrimage at the temple. He said that it was a more meaningful experience to be where Jesus walked than to be the first person to step on the moon. That's powerful. We're using it as a marketing strategy to talk about running where Jesus walked. Now, in fairness, probably none of the race of the marathon, although maybe, actually not true, maybe. When you go up onto the Mount of Olives, we know Jesus was up there. Now, the roads weren't paved then, but he saw the same view. He didn't have a golden dome to look at. He saw a temple. So it actually is true that we tell people that they can run where Jesus walked or walk where Jesus walked and give people that meaningful experience. It doesn't matter if they're first-timers. It doesn't matter if they're runners or walkers or neither. We're going to rent plastic chairs and let people sit on the sidelines and cheer if that's what they want to do. But the intent is to have meaningful interactive experiences. We're bringing people to see the nonprofits that we're funding and interact with them. You're asking someone to help fund you to do something, and you're actually going on the ground and doing it. And that's the goal. But the beauty, so we want, what does the participant get out of it? That experience. But we're also, and I tend to, where I can, not insincerely, look to a biblical example. I know sometimes Genesis 12:3 is overused. To me, it's sort of my, what's the word I want to use? My playbook. Because God truly does say, I will bless those who bless you. And I don't know what he meant, right? When we talk about what do we want, what blessings could God give us for blessing Israel? Health, financial resources, things that are not stressful in our lives, in our family. We can come up with a lot of things, happiness. But I decided I wanted to be part of that formula because it is a formula. So what we're offering is that as an incentive to help people raise more money to tangibly, materially bless Israel, we're offering subsidies to make the trip cheaper and possibly even free.
So tell me some of the wow moments. What are some of the big highlights?
The actual concept, which was articulated and experienced, which is running in the footsteps of Jesus. It was a beautiful experience for me as an Orthodox Jew to be able to provide that experience about which people wept. Thinking about and doing and then crossing the finish line. If that's the only thing that I do in my life, that's good enough because it gave people added dimension to their faith and spirituality that was very powerful for me. to experience on the sidelines, if you will. We had one woman who participated who isn't a runner, asked me to sign her up for the 5K, and she walked. God wasn't going to have her just have a walking by herself experience. A teenage Israeli boy with cerebral palsy came up to her and took her hand, and they walked most of the 5 kilometers together. And of course, this boy happened to be an English speaker, so they were able to speak, and she came away with a really powerful experience interacting.
You can find out all you need to know at runforzion.com. Jonathan, thank you for being our guest today on Front Page Jerusalem.
Thank you, Kevin. It's awesome. It's always great to see you. And thank you for giving me this opportunity to share a little bit.
Thanks, Kevin, for that enlightening interview about the new Run for Zion program, building new relationships at the annual Jerusalem Marathon in Israel. Well, our time is almost up for this week, but before we go, let's take another visit to the CFI Jerusalem News Desk with David Milburn. David?
Thanks again, Al. Less than 3 months after U.S. President Donald Trump recognized Israel's sovereignty over the Golan Heights, the cabinet on Sunday started the bureaucratic ball rolling towards establishing a new community on the Golan Heights called Ramat Trump, or Trump Heights. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who pushed to name the settlement after Trump in appreciation of his recognition of Israel's sovereignty over the Golan, as well as moving the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem, and his strong support for Israel. He unveiled the sign Ramat Trump on a plot of synthetic grass near the existing community of Keilah. At the opening of a special cabinet meeting held on Golan Heights, Netanyahu said, "We are proud to have the opportunity to establish a new community and also to honor a good friend." In addition to recognizing Israeli sovereignty over the Golan and Jerusalem as Israel's capital, Netanyahu also mentioned as reason for appreciation Trump's withdrawal from the Iranian nuclear deal. Trump responded to the gesture on Twitter, thanking Netanyahu and the State of Israel for this great honor.
Thanks, David. Well, that's our show for today. We hope that you've enjoyed the program, everybody. And thanks for joining us. And please don't forget to support this station because it supports Israel. But before we go, let me invite you to join us on this same station again next week as we bring you all the latest news from Israel and the Middle East. So for now, on behalf of the entire staff of Front Page Jerusalem, I'm Earl Cox, reminding you that because God loves Israel, I do too.
You've been listening to Front Page Jerusalem. For more information, go to frontpagejerusalem.com. Front Page Jerusalem is brought to you by Christian Friends of Israel Jerusalem, making a difference in Israel one life at a time. Front Page Jerusalem is a production of Level E Media Incorporated.